Jesus, that's God's Son, is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. For in him all things were created, in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or principalities or authorities. All things were created through him and for him. And he is before all things, and in him all things hold together. He is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, that in everything he might be preeminent. For in him all the fullness of God was pleased to dwell, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether on earth or in heaven, making peace by the blood of his cross.
Just before I turn actually to the Bible, I want to pose a question for you to think about. What do you think of when you hear the words the environment? Perhaps you jump straight to climate change, or perhaps having heard so much about it, you switch off, especially about climate change. But perhaps you saw the Blue Planet programs a year or so ago, and now you try to avoid single-use plastic, thinking you're doing your bit that way. Or perhaps you've seen the recent program Extinction, The Facts with David Attenborough, and wondered what on earth, literally, you could do that would actually make a difference. Or perhaps you do think of it as God's wonderful creation, which we've both used and abused. And I've actually come to this last definition, which is why I actually prefer to talk about caring for God's creation. So, the biblical mandate. I'm going to come to the Colossians passage in a few minutes, but I want to pick up on a few other themes first. And let's go right back to the beginning and back to Genesis chapter 1 and the account of creation. And the last bit, as you know, is the creation of mankind. And after that, God rested on the seventh day. So on that sixth day, God creates humankind. And in verse 28, God says to them, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth, subdue it, have dominion over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air and over every living thing that moves upon the earth. And I think that, well, probably at least since the Industrial Revolution, people have been taking verse 28 as giving us carte blanche to use creation for our own ends, with words like subdue and have dominion. But note the context, which I've highlighted here in red. We're made, created in God's image, and so we're intended to be God's image bearers on earth. So what actually does it really mean to subdue the earth, to have dominion, doing that in God's image? Well, Andrew's already used the word stewardship. And yes, I think that's right, that we do that not because creation's for us, but actually on behalf of God. So we should be doing it in a God-like way. So we have to say, well, what's God's character? Well, he's loving, he's merciful, he's gentle, and he's compassionate. And so I think that that's what it means to rule over the earth and subdue it and so on. But also in verse 31, that last verse of that chapter, God looks at his creation. He says, gosh, it's very good. Don't you think he wants us to keep it that way? He made it very good. Shouldn't we be keeping it that way as we're just stewards of it? So let's move on a chapter and look at verse 15. Very simply, in the NRSV, it says, Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to till it and keep it. But I'm no Hebrew scholar, but I've had a look at the Hebrew for this. And the word till, the Hebrew word abad, it can mean to work or to serve or even to worship. And then keep is another Hebrew word, shamar. And that can mean, yes, it can mean to keep, but it can also mean to watch or preserve. So this is the way we could translate this verse. The Lord God took the man, put him in the Garden of Eden to serve it and preserve it. Before I go on, let's just take a moment to think about what that actually means for us, to serve and preserve God's creation. Puts a completely different complexion on our relationship with the natural world, doesn't it? It's no longer there to serve us, no longer ours to use for our own ends. Rather, we're to care for it, not only for our generation, but for future generations. Okay, so this was God's plan for humankind before the fall. But I think a lot of Christians would say, well, does it actually matter in our New Testament age? After all, Jesus or his apostles, they don't talk about caring for creation. We don't see much of that. Well, actually, we do, perhaps implicitly more than explicitly, more than you might realize. So let's look at Jesus himself first. Well, first of all, he actually affirmed creation by becoming part of it. He became dependent on creation for eating and drinking. That, you know, his food came from creation, for waking and sleeping, light and dark, night and day, for rain and sun enabling crops to grow to provide food. Yes, sometimes he does exert authority to change its course, so he calms the storm on the Sea of Galilee. But those occasions are pretty rare and noteworthy. You know, there's only one or two of them in the Gospels. And then Jesus affirms creation. He talks about it lots. You'll know the parables of the sower, the lost sheep, there's the mustard seed, the wheat and weeds, laborers in the vineyard, tenant farmers, budding fig tree, houses built on sand and rock. And yes, in the feeding of the 5,000, yes, it was miraculous. Yes, in one sense, he exerted authority over nature. But actually in that, he recognized that actually we all depend on eating. And by and large, the food we eat and what we drink comes from creation. And then in the Last Supper, I believe Jesus affirms creation. We think of the wine and the bread of the communion elements as relating very much to the cross, but it also relates back to creation and literally Earth's communion in creation. If you go back to Genesis 1, verse 29, God says, I give you every seed-bearing plant from which we get bread, and every tree that has fruit with seed in it, from which we get grapes and hence wine. So I think, when we take communion, let's not just remember the cross, but remember that's rooted also in creation. And then Jesus' return will usher in the renewal of creation. Now, if you go back to Revelation 21:1, it talks about a new heaven and a new earth. But actually, the sense in that verse is not of something completely new, a replacement. It's the sense the word new there is being renewed. So I think that speaks of our fragile planet being renewed, returned to what it should have been before the fall. And I think that's saying that we're going to spend eternity in this renewed creation. Remember that it goes on, though, that chapter in Revelation to talk about the new Jerusalem descending from heaven to earth. And we talk about the second coming of Jesus coming back to earth. I don't read anywhere in the Bible that they disappear off again to somewhere like heaven. I think heaven comes to earth, and that's where we'll spend eternity. And finally, in Mark 15, Jesus says, proclaim the good news to the whole of creation. He doesn't say to humankind, to all the nations, to the people of this earth. He says, proclaim the good news to the whole creation. And I think that's because the fall didn't just disrupt our relationship with God. It put the whole of creation and our relationship with it out of joint. So Jesus' death and resurrection, they don't just provide a pathway for our relationship with God to be restored. They are the source of renewing our relationship with creation. So as I said just now, serving and preserving it, and are restoring creation as God's image bearers to how God made it. Very good. So now we can see that in some verses in Colossians and Corinthians. So let's come back to our reading. And just a couple of verses from that reading. I'm not going to give you a complete exposition of it. But verse 16, the second part of it, all things have been created through him, that's through Jesus, and for him. And I don't know if you ever noticed that it says created for him. So creation doesn't actually exist for us at all. It exists for Jesus. So we're responsible to Jesus for how we treat it. I think we have no right whatever to think we can use it as we please, let alone that's God's command and purpose and the meaning of Genesis 1:28. Creation exists for Jesus, not for us. And then in verse 20, it talks about through him, through Jesus, God was pleased to reconcile to himself all things. And again, I'm not a Greek scholar, but I looked up the translation, and all things really is neuter. It's not all humankind. You can't translate it just as people. It is all things. So I think we have to understand this as extending to all of creation. And I love the way the Message puts these couple of verses. So I don't know how familiar you are with the Message version, but I think sometimes it puts things really well. So this is how it puts verse 19. All the broken and dislocated pieces of the universe, people and things, animals and atoms, get properly fixed and fit together in vibrant harmonies, all because of his death. Let me just read that again for you. All the broken and dislocated pieces of the universe, people and things, animals and atoms, get properly fixed and fit together in vibrant harmonies, all because of his death. And then verse 20 also talks about reconciliation. So according to one dictionary I looked up, to reconcile means to restore to friendship or harmony. That's that word harmony again, as in the Message version. So then we have to ask ourselves, okay, so how is God going to do that reconciliation? Well, actually, the wonderful thing is he doesn't do it all himself. This is the Message version, by the way. He does it through us and with us. And so in 1 Corinthians 3, verse 9, depending on which translation you read, it could be we are God's servants, fellow workers in God's service, or in the complete Jewish Bible, we are God's co-workers. Again, I checked that up. What's the word co-workers back in the Greek? And it's very clearly that in this verse that we're not just co-workers with one another, we are God's co-workers. The word is synergos. We get the word synergy from it. And ergon is work, but the sun part doesn't just mean with, it can mean together with or in association with. So I think this is saying we are God's co-workers. We work in association with God to achieve his purposes. And then 2 Corinthians 5:18, God gave us the ministry of reconciliation. Yeah, we are God's agents in this work of reconciliation, not just between people and God, but people and creation, our relationship with creation as well. I find that we have this work of reconciliation, that God's delegated it to us, if you like. I think that's awesome. I think it's absolutely amazing. But I think it's also a huge responsibility. So I think this says that we have a leading role, or we should have a leading role, in caring for and restoring creation. And that's part of our calling.
Thank you, Philip, for that amazing, it's one of the clearest expressions I've heard of our duty to care for God's creation. And that's a fantastic reminder. It doesn't belong to us. It's been given to us as our context for living, but it belongs to God. What a wonderful reminder you've given us this morning. Thank you so much. And we're here to serve creation and to preserve creation, to serve the Lord. It's His, it belongs to Him. And we think often it's great to have a Bible study, but Bible studies aren't just to fill our heads with more knowledge. Bible study is to help us change our way of living, that we become doers of God's word and not just hearers of God's word. So you're going to help us now, Philip. We want to think through just briefly the, you know, what do we do? What do we do? This is the mandate. How can we serve better? I think that's the title for this next bit.
Yeah.
That you're just going to lead us through a few thoughts. And then I want us to think about Sea Green Baptist Church, caring for God's creation. What more can we do? Back to you, Philip. Thank you so much.
Okay, I actually want to start with a little bit more from Scripture and just remind you, first of all, of the parable of the Good Samaritan. And it struck me a few months ago that we can learn from this about why we should be acting and doing things differently. You might think, well, how so? Well, put it this way. The priest and the Levite who walked on past the man who'd been attacked, they decided it was someone else's problem, wasn't their problem. But the Samaritan actually decided he could do something, and he did it. Not only that, but he got the innkeeper involved as well. Or perhaps the priest and the Levite thought, well, actually, it's, you know, inconvenient to stop and help. You know, I've got to get to Jerusalem or wherever it was they were going. And, you know, we've got to get there. We don't want to be late. We've got things to do there. And they just thought, well, it was inconvenient. But actually, the Samaritan decided that he could stop and help. It might have been inconvenient. In fact, it probably wasn't convenient for him to stop and help. After all, he put the man on his donkey, so he had to walk. And not only that, it cost him money because he paid the innkeeper to look after the chap. So I think we need to look at it in this way, that we should be like the Good Samaritan, deciding that we can do something and we're going to do something, even if it's not quite convenient. And that applies towards creation and how we treat creation. And I also passionately believe that we can make a difference individually and together. It's often too easy to feel that our actions are smaller and insignificant, but the reality is we can all make a difference. And when there are other people where we live and in our country and in the world, all carrying out their small actions in their everyday lives, the impact actually can be massive. Let me give you a couple of small examples here, and then I'll give you some more detailed practical examples. So if we change our buying habits, then and perhaps buy less stuff or overall, then actually the shops are going to have to change what they sell and how they sell it. And if we walked and cycled more and used the car less, then town planners would have to make more provision for bikes. And I think the government is actually now putting money into that. And we can campaign as well, and it does make a difference. You may think, oh, well, campaigning doesn't make a difference. But here in St. Albans, where I live, we had a campaign last year to get the council to declare a climate emergency. And so now they're working on turning that into action, and the environmental groups here in St. Albans are holding their feet to the fire on that one. I'll come back to buying and travelling shortly, but let's just think about lockdown. Empty streets, yes, but actually I think the early stages, especially of lockdown, gave many of us a glimpse of what a greener, healthier, better world could look like. Far less traffic on the roads and noise from aircraft, bluer skies, cleaner air, reconnecting with nature and getting exercise through walks in the countryside or local parks and green spaces. And Andrew earlier mentioned an article in the Times that actually talked about just that. So wouldn't we like to preserve at least some of this once we've overcome COVID-19 rather than go back to business as it was before COVID-19? But we need to play our part. We can't just leave it to others. And also, just as an aside, it's worth noting that lots of people, especially young people, are really concerned about climate change and other environmental problems. So if we genuinely share their concerns, it gives us an opening to talk about our faith with them. Okay, so what can we do? And if we're doing some things already, what more can we do? Well, these are the issues we face. Loss of biodiversity, and that was really brought home, wasn't it, by David Attenborough's program a week or two back on TV. Climate change, yes. A year or two back, David Attenborough talked much more about climate change. And this is what he said. Right now, we're facing a man-made disaster of global scale. Our greatest threat in thousands of years. Climate change, if we don't take action, the collapse of our civilizations and the extinction of much of the world is on the horizon. Let me just point out that loss of biodiversity isn't just to do with climate change. That's part of it, but it's not all of it. And then pollution's been with us both in the sea and on land for decades, but especially now we're getting much more aware of plastic in the oceans. Okay, so let's start looking at where the energy that we use is actually going. And that's responsible for climate change and partly responsible for loss of biodiversity. But also, it's responsible for producing partly responsible for producing the plastics and other rubbish that we create. So let's look at it. And this is the average annual UK footprint, carbon footprint per person. And so what I'm going to do is look at some ideas for how we can make a difference. So, interestingly, food, which isn't just about our buying and preparing it, but it's production, it's transport, and other purchases, the other stuff we buy, make up about half of our energy consumption. But let's start with the energy we use in and lose from our homes. So over half the energy we burn in our homes is heating. So the best thing you can do is stop the heat getting out and the cold getting in. And that shows you where from a typical home the heat goes. So basically the message is insulate, insulate, insulate. Walls, roofs, windows, doors. And then you could go beyond that. You could replace a gas or oil-fired boiler with a heat pump. And I understand the government's about to launch the Green Homes Grant Scheme to help pay for certain energy efficient home improvements. So why not find out more and see whether you could take advantage of some of this. If the government's offering money to do this, and I think it's a really great idea that they're actually picking up on this, let's take advantage of it. Okay, what about food and the other stuff we buy? There's a good principle for food, and it's called LOAF. Can you buy food that's locally grown or organic or even both, that's animal friendly? Or if it is coming from further afield, can you buy fair trade food? So can you buy locally grown food rather than what's been transported hundreds or even thousands of miles? There are various schemes that will deliver boxes of veg to your door. Rather than you buying it from the supermarkets. And a healthier diet, less red meat, less dairy products and processed foods, more fruit and veg is better for the environment and it's better for you. But also, how much food do you waste? There's just a huge amount of food wasted. It's something like of the food that's produced in this country, 30 or 40% of it goes to waste. Now, some of that is because the shops won't sell it because it's wonky or whatever, but some of it is what people waste. What about growing your own food? Now, I'm no gardener, I have to say, but this year I've grown beetroots, peas, courgettes, tomatoes and rhubarb, and it was fantastic to see those photos earlier of all the stuff that you guys and people have been growing in your gardens. And that was an absolutely amazing array. of fruit and veg and gourds and so on. So, yeah, congratulations to you all on doing that. What about the other stuff we purchase? Do we really need that new phone, that new dress or pair of shoes? And I think it's better to spend less overall, but buy quality goods, well-made stuff that will last longer and can be repaired. And perhaps not just buy that really cheap T-shirt that's been made in sweatshop conditions, which might be in Bangladesh or it might be in Leicester, so we've been hearing. I'll talk about getting stuff repaired and so on in a moment. What about travel? Well, I know Seer Green's quite a small village. And unless you actually want to go somewhere that's on the train line, you probably need to drive. But how do you travel around the village? You know, do you drive to church when your church meets face-to-face rather than by Zoom? Could you cycle there or walk there? What about the children who go to the village school? Do they go by mum's or dad's taxi? Could they walk or bike? What about, I think you've got a convenience store and a butcher's in the village. Again, do you drive there? Could you go on your bike? Bikes can have baskets or panniers, so you can put your shopping in there. And I've been years and years ago to the area around Seer Green. I know you've got some lovely countryside there, so you can get all the exercise you need in that countryside. So I think these are the questions you actually need to ask yourself. Do you actually need to drive? Well, if you do, there are ways to drive in a fuel-efficient way. If you're buying a new car, and again, I'd say don't replace your car just because it's 3 years old. Depends how much you use it, of course, but don't use resources unnecessarily. So, you know, think about when you actually need to replace your car. Some these days have 5 or 7 year warranties. So why not keep it for that long or even longer? But then when you are buying a new car, buy one that's fuel efficient, or even think about a hybrid or even an electric car. Electric cars are vastly improved in terms of range and power and so on now. And they're getting better all the time. So I'm hoping my next car will be an electric car, and that'll probably be in a couple of years' time. If you don't need to drive, I've already said, you can walk or bike, you can exercise that way. Can you use public transport? I went to the Lake District recently. I went by bus into town, caught the train into London, train up to Penrith, and then used a couple of buses to where I was staying. It can be done. And actually, it was a lot more relaxing than simply driving there. And then there's the big question, and I think that's for us all to answer individually. Do we fly or do we stop flying? Can we fly less than we do? Okay, well, I mentioned getting stuff repaired. And so what can we do about waste? Now, one of the sad things about COVID-19 is all the PPE, gloves and masks and so on, that having used them have been thrown away. And sadly, some of that weight, that PPE has been just thrown out onto the verges and into nature, and that's really sad to see pictures like this one. But the first thing we can do is try and avoid our waste. We just create far too much waste. I have to say that the shops where we buy, they package everything or overpackage everything, but ultimately it's the producers of the raw materials for packaging that drive this, I think, and very little of it can be recycled. So the best thing we can do, if we can, is avoid waste. Now, I've talked about avoiding food waste, but also what about when we go shopping, when we're offered a bag in a shop? Refuse it. Take your own along. And if you can't avoid it completely, then try and reduce it. So buy the fruit and the veg loose if you can, rather than pre-packed. And then what about the appliances that break down? Can we get them repaired? If we tear our clothes, can we repair that? You know, hopefully we can sew a button on. What about the ones you really don't need or don't want? Could someone else have them? So we all know we can take them to charity shops, but the various online sites, you can advertise things you want to give away. Free Cycle and Freegal, for example. Well, you can try and sell them on eBay these days. So recycling probably should be the last thing we think about. And if there's things you can't recycle in your curbside collection, then I gather there's a big household waste recycling centre in Beaconsfield. So recycle as much as you can. But before you recycle, think about reusing things, repairing things. Think about reducing the waste in the first place. Finally, just a couple of points on water, but also biodiversity. We use too much water. You might not realise it, but too often we just take it for granted, and also the dealing with the wastewater. But actually, it takes energy to treat the water, to pump it to our houses, and then treat the sewage. And then there's the infrastructure that's required to store and transport it. Even here in the UK, water is not an unlimited resource. So here briefly are some things we can do to reduce water use in the home, in the garden. But one of the consequences of our impacts on the environment is the crash in the population of pollinators. I showed you a picture of a bee earlier, and there, you know, among the important pollinators, they pollinate the crops. So if we kill them or reduce their populations, then the crops don't get pollinated and we don't get food. So anything that encourages pollinators is welcome. So what can we do about that? Well, we can leave some of our grass uncut, or we could even plant a bit of our garden with wildflowers. And that will attract pollinators, and that helps keep pollinators' populations up. And then you could get involved with a local project. So are there any projects you've got locally that seek to increase biodiversity? I had a look, and I gather there are a few nature reserves not far away from Seer Green. There's Holtzbur Bank, for example, which I'm sure you know. Some of you know, but just Google nature reserves near Seer Green if you don't know them. So get involved, support them, visit them in any way that you can. So there's a lot more we could do, but I hope you found these suggestions useful and helpful. And I think that they're just a start, but I really do believe, as I said earlier, that our actions collectively can make a real and significant difference. And you can do that individually, but as a church, I'd encourage you, press on, gain your bronze award. Don't stop there, aim for silver and gold. My own church, we're at bronze. We're well into silver territory on some of the areas, but we're still only bronze in one area that we need to pick up on. And the Eco Church survey and the website give you plenty of ideas for how to get there. So that's the practical side, but I want to leave you with one final thought. Creation meets our needs, but it doesn't meet our greed.